Dyson and myself, Senator Stevens. It is 3:35, and today our plans are to deal with two joint resolutions, SJR 7, SJR 9, and deal with those first, then we'll go on to Senate Bill 65 and 99, which deal with prisons. My intention is to have an opportunity to hear further testimony on 65 and then introduce 99, Senate Bill 99, and not to move either of those out today, but move them out on Thursday, move them up to finance. The records show that Senator Cowdery is present. Let's begin with SJR 7, Vancouver's bid for the 2010 Winter Games. Speak to us about that. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Riley. I am a choir here. I don't know if this is critical or not. I am staff to the World Trade Committee and to Senator Cowdery. And basically, the Senate Joint Resolution 7 is an expression of support for Vancouver, British Columbia's bid for the 2010 Winter Olympic Winter Games and the Paralympic Winter Games. Pardon me for my congestion also. I'm suffering from a cold. Presently, the city of Vancouver, British Columbia, and the nearby resort community of Whistler are hoping to host the 2010 Winter Olympic Games. The competing cities are Pyeongchang, Korea, as well as Salzburg, Austria. In July of this year, the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, will make its decision and award the bid to one of these three cities. If Vancouver is successful, Alaska is certain to see economic benefits. In particular, our state stands to benefit in the tourism and winter recreation sectors due to overall worldwide exposure of the Pacific Northwest region of the country. As an example, the entire western region of the mainland United States received an estimated $1 billion in economic boost from the 2000 Winter Games in Salt Lake City. Alaska and British Columbia share close economic, government, sporting, cultural, and family ties along a very lengthy common border. The primary goal of this resolution is to strengthen these ties through this formal resolution of support. Passage of this resolution will mean more than simply neighborly expression of support, because traditionally the IOC does give considerable weight to such resolutions when making its bid determination. It is likely that Alaskan small business owners, from the small bed and breakfast establishments to the microbreweries to the fish processors, will realize the primary economic benefit of a successful 2010 bid by Vancouver and Whistler, British Columbia. And I ask the committee support for SJR 7. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Riley. Questions, Mr. Riley?
The small business that you talked about, it's my understanding how that might work if they get this, that many of our business would be down there passing out brochures and everything and letting them know. Can you elaborate a little bit on
that? Well, I'm sure that would certainly be the intent of many of the small businessmen here. I've not spoken with any in particular myself that intend to do that, but if I were a small business owner, I certainly would be down there in some fashion, or have a representative there, or the organizations that represent so many of them. So.
Thank you, Mr. Riley. For the record, Senator Guest arrived some time ago, so we are our full committee. Thank you, Senator Cowdery.
I apologize for being late. I was across the street. We didn't even get all our bills. But I said, I got to leave at 3:30, so this is where we're at. We're here.
Thank you. Glad you're here. Any further questions, Mr. Riley? Any testimony, testimony scheduled? Yes, Senator Dyson?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move this resolution out of committee with individual recommendations. Zero fiscal note.
That's unanimous consent.
Thank you, Senator. Unanimous consent. Any objection? Okay, we have done that. Thank you very much, Mr. Riley. Move on to SJR 9, supported members of the military. We need to have a motion to adopt the CS for the purposes of discussion.
So moved.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. Move to adopt the CS for purpose of discussion. Any objection? We have done that. Then, Senator Bundy, good to have you in front of us.
Mr. Chairman, you look so much taller from here.
I should say that Senator Bundy sort of beat up on me in the last committee we had here about a half an hour ago, so...
Gee, I don't recall that, Mr. Chairman. Senator G., Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, obviously we can't turn on the television news without being aware of the increasing likelihood, I would say, of members of the armed forces going in harm's way to do duty that in our stead. Just the past week, members of the Alaska National Guard were activated, and I understand they are still in the state awaiting orders to their duty station. And so I appreciate you hearing this resolution at your earliest opportunity. Hopefully we will be able to, assuming favorable action from your group, move this on to the appropriate people so that the folks that are making considerable sacrifice and hopefully never have be called on to make the ultimate sacrifice on our behalf will know that there is some support. Because also in the news there are those who have varying points of view that may not be considered supportive. So I introduced SJR 9 because all members of our nation's military from all branches certainly deserve our support. Resolution, the least we can do for our gallant young men and women in all branches of the military and their families and their civilian employers who are also called on to make sacrifices when their valuable employees are called up and asked to participate in the defense of our country. SJR 9 expresses the fact that members of the Alaska State Legislature recognize the commitment of the members of the Alaska National Guard and other members of our active duty military. It expresses our support for men and women who could be called on to defend our freedoms. It expresses our gratitude for the sacrifices that the families and civilian employees of our men and women in uniform make, and expresses our hope that all members of the Guard and other branches of the military return safely to their families. You have a blank CS in your packet there. Clearly honors all members of the military, whether Guard or active duty, and it corrects the titles for General Chandler and General Campbell. With that, I would encourage your support and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Senator Bundy. Questions from the committee? Yes.
I became aware just recently. I don't think we can. Maybe this is not. Maybe you have to have a statute change. But for what we both think the same. But we had a situation where on 9/11 there was a reserve military person in the air when Seattle got reactivated on 9/11. Served about, I don't know, a year or short of a year overseas. He came back. Remember, that was September. He came back to the States, came in back to Alaska, got his family, and they went and toured the States for a couple of months in a motorhome or something like that. He filed for a permanent fund dividend, and they can exempt his time as service, but unlike you or me, who we can be out of state 180 days, up to 180 days, and still get our dividend, they are penalized by they can only be out of state for 45 days. And there was a number of these veterans that's in current that's coming out of the woodwork that I just wanted to say this for the record. I think it's a disservice to our people, and I'm working on it up in finance to hopefully correct that. And if you see that bill come along, I just wanted to make it for the record to make it, if we can carry it on some other bill to straighten this flaw in our statutes up, to at least give them the opportunity the same. If they're not, don't penalize them by lowering the 45-day standard on the veterans or the ones that are active, make them the same as everybody else.
Senator Cotter?
That's a statement there, just a statement, more or less.
Thank you.
To alert my good senator when he sees that up there.
I'm alerted.
Thank you.
Any further questions of Senator Bundy? Yes, sir, Senator Dyson.
Let's move it.
Yes, let's do that. Need a motion then to pass it out.
I move that we
Senator Bundy. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Back up to finance where he's needed. Anyway, committee substitute presented joint resolution 9 out with individual. Ask for unanimous consent.
Individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator. Any objection? Thank you very much, Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senators.
We didn't have anybody to...
It's just in case there's something we need to
know. Right.
Okay, so that's 65 that we'll start off with, and then 90.
Okay. Okay, we have before us now... In the bill. 65. Before it was on the committee, we heard Senate Bill 65. I have not had a chance to hear it. My intention is not to pass it today, but to pass it on Thursday to move it out along with Senate Bill 99. Add any testimony today that needs to be added. Senator Green, did you have any comments to begin with, or? I know you've already spoken to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lida Green. I'm the senator from Senate District N, which is the core area of the Mat-Su Borough. And as I stated previously in the introducing the legislation and going over the sponsor statement, that it goes without saying that facilities for prisoners are badly needed in the state of Alaska. And this proposed plan offers the opportunity for some of our areas in our state to be involved with that project and to bring forward the construction and the bonding proposal and have facilities in place that are joined to currently existing facilities so that we are not building any new administration or causing a growth at a place where we don't need it. We're consolidating services and making use of facilities already in place. And I would bring to your attention two things. As you review the fiscal notes, be reminded that the comments and a letter you may have received or some explanation that you may have received from the Department of Revenue actually would be in place of some of the figures on shown on the Department of Corrections fiscal notes, and so they should not be added together. They are revenue fields that the state might ought to be the person doing the actual bonding, whereas the communities feel like they are perfectly capable of doing that. And the other place. I think, I don't know if you have anyone online to testify, but I know when we left our meeting the previous time, there were some folks from around who were interested in testifying. I don't know if they're back on.
Yes, Senator Green, we have several people who asked to testify, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I believe.
Okay, and I think you have been given some extra information perhaps that was not available at the first hearing that would be of interest to the members for your reading and review.
Thank you, Senator Green. Any questions of Senator Green? Thank you very much for your time, and now we'll go to testimony, and we'll begin with Lieutenant Matthew Levesque, I believe, did I state troopers, and is he here or online? Oh, I'm sorry, the Anchorage LIO.
I don't have any further concerns. Excuse me, testimony, I'm available for questions.
Okay, thank you, Lieutenant. What about Mary Bowery, also in Anchorage? Do you have any comments?
Yes, sir, I do.
Please go ahead, Mary.
Okay. My name is Mary Bowery, and I'm not an employee of the Department of Corrections, and I don't even know anyone in the department. Neither do I own stock in any private correctional company. I simply come as a wife and a mother and a concerned Alaskan citizen, but I do have some first-hand knowledge about privatization. And as you can tell, I'm not from Alaska, I'm from Tennessee. And since the early 90s, Tennessee has been involved with prison privatization. And during that time, the private companies there made many promises about the money that would be saved by going private. And Tennessee did go ahead and contract with the company there. Tennessee built three identical prisons. One of them was to be managed by a private company. And then there was a three-year study that was made of those prisons to analyze the cost. And I was involved in that study, so that's why I have some information about it. There were some very interesting conclusions that came out of the study. One of them was that there was only pennies a day savings per day per inmate between the private prison and the state prison. Some things, though, that were really interesting that we didn't realize until later was one in the contract with the private prison, only healthy inmates were assigned to the private prison. Per their contract, the private prison did not take inmates that had TB, cancer, HIV causes, AIDS, or hepatitis C. They also had a $4,000 medical cap per inmate per year. Obviously, same prisons don't have that luxury. Initially, only medium custody inmates or lower were assigned to the private prison. The state prison contained maximum protective custody, closed, segregated, mentally ill, etc., etc. All these are very expensive to have. Additionally, the state prison was required to have an emergency response team that included a tag team and a hostage negotiator team, and these are also additional costs. Things that we learned during this the study was that the private prison was able to utilize unused beds for inmates from other states. This can sometimes be double dipped if the state's also paying for that bed. By having inmates from other states into the prison, the private prison, it caused several problems. One, that it mixed the Tennessee inmates with inmates from other states. However, if a Tennessee inmate was injured from inmate from another state, Tennessee was still liable for any medical or legal costs. They also had to pay this, they were responsible for the cost for any new charges to prosecute that inmate. And then we learned a lesson when there was a major escape from the private prison. Six inmates with violent histories escaped. And because private prisons have no legal jurisdiction, the state had to work the escape. And employees from the state prisons, the troopers, et cetera, had to come in and work. Because this was not a contracted item, Tennessee taxpayers were not reimbursed for this expense. Later, when a civil suit was filed from a citizen, Tennessee found out that they were also responsible for all inmates in the state of Tennessee, even if they are not Tennessee inmates, but just being housed in a private prison in the state. And at this point, I just 650 to 700 inmates in Arizona. And so I'm very concerned about what would happen to the other 500 beds that would not be used. I assure you that a for-profit company would not let profitable beds be empty. We also learned about instability. During this time, the private prison had a turnover rate of 100% in 2 years, 62.9% in the first 6 months. And as you know, turnover equals inexperience, and that caused increased security risk and liability costs, which the state has to cover. While some may think it can give corrections away, the state will always be responsible on carrying the liability. We also found that there was more inmate idleness because the private prisons had less inmate jobs, less educational or rehab opportunities and programs. There was also an increase in incident reports and violent acts. At the same time, Tennessee, the state prison, was able to give work service crews. The prison that I was at had 17,839 hours of service crews just during the month of December, while the private prison had 1,336. So you see that there is over 16,000 hours difference there. And at the end of the year, the state prison was able to return over $1 million of unused budget to the taxpayers of Tennessee. The private prison, the money they had left over went to the Chicago holders. And just as a last note, the state prison was fully accredited, and they received the highest possible score available. As a citizen, I'm very concerned about the safety of the community. When you have a private prison, I'm also concerned that there's not as many...
Ms. Mowry, I'd ask you to shorten your thoughts, if you would, please, and try to make them simpler, and please go on, though.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, I'm closing, but I was just very concerned about the private prison and hope that the legislature will definitely look at all the questions to make sure that there's a safety aspect involved.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bauer. And would you clarify, you said the prison you were at, in what capacity were you there? It might help us to understand.
I was in the Correctional Counselor 3 that does work with parole and also works in the housing unit. Each housing unit had 400 inmates we were responsible for, and they included everything from security to also worked on the hostage negotiating team.
Thank you, Ms. Bowery. Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Bowery? Again, thank you very much. We'll move on to Frank Smith and the off-net. Frank, are you there?
Yes. Thank you very much, Senator. I've testified on these bills the last couple of years on prison bills, and I'm particularly interested in seeing SB 65 passed. I used to run the substance use programs on the Hill and then Palmer pretrial, so I'm quite familiar with the facilities that Senator Green envisioned. I also have worked around the state, and I've visited not only facilities around the state, but I've visited Alaska prisons in Florence, Arizona, and I've actually visited prisons all over the world. I recently had a chapter published on Native American private prisons, which I forwarded to the committee chair this morning. I think that the SB 65 is immensely superior to the prison offered in Whittier in a number of different respects. One of them is access. Massu, even though it's some distance from Anchorage, has far better access. And Senator Bill's bill, Senator Green's bill, includes prisons that are desperately needed, the expansions in Bethlehem, Fairbanks. The cost at Bethlehem has been raised considerably because the pretrial and sentence prisoners are mixed, and in order to keep the population standards there, correctional officers and deputized other people like probation officers have to go back and forth taking prisoners to other prisons like Fairbanks or Seward or Anchorage. So I think this would be an tremendous improvement. Fairbanks also needs beds. I've visited facilities in Fairbanks. I would greatly hope that that SB 65 is passed out of committee. I think it will present a huge savings to the state. And the most important thing, and I've been involved in research in criminal justice for 3 years, is bringing prisoners closer to their homes. I think that MASU is good. It could be better. I'm hoping that populations and projections will be reduced as the legislature takes a good look at what's putting people in jail in Alaska and what's keeping people there. And I'm terribly concerned about the competing prospects in Whittier, which I think would really make it difficult for people to get there. I have seen people from all over the state, particularly the northern tier. I worked in Barrow for 7 years. The people there would come to Anchorage and couldn't even get out to Highland Mountain to see their kin. That connection with family and support systems and community is absolutely the most important thing in keeping Native Alaskans from going back to jail. I'm very pleased that we have some testimony from Tennessee, because that study that was referred to indicated that the state, even with all the reservations that have been given to you in testimony, the state only saves 38 cents a day with those prisons. In a private prison for making terrible wages compared to correctional officers, but when I last looked up the salaries of CEOs for private prison corporations, they're up around the $750,000, $230,000 bracket. So that's where the difference is. They're kind of paying fast food wages and minimum wages to the top tier. Thank you very much. If you'd like to ask any questions, I'd be glad to answer where I could.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Yes, there are some questions. Just for the committee, I'd like to, my plan is let everyone have 4 minutes and give them one more minute if it goes to that, and ask them to focus at that point, if you're comfortable with that. Senator Cowdery?
Cost. Do you think cost of housing our prisoner is important?
Well, I absolutely do.
You said you've been to, I just got back from touring the Arizona facility last weekend.
I'm aware of that.
And,
glad you got down there.
Yeah. And do you think we can compete anyway with cost, and why should we build here and not export them?
Well, you know, it's what I said before about the proximity of families is very important. The other thing is that the private contractors, all of them, tend to be quite troubled. They tend to have terrific turnover, as was referred to in the earlier testimony. The Corrections Yearbook, last one I saw, had private turnover per year at 54%, so it's even a little higher than what was just testified to, where public prisons are at 14-point-something percent, less than a third. That kind of training helps keep things under control and also helps in the rehabilitative process when you have professional staff that stay with the jobs for retirement that don't turn over in 2 years. The cost really has been shaped by the price. Now, there's a difference, of course, if you're paying privates to do something in Florence, Arizona, or Mississippi. I mean, Alaska could send prisoners to Mississippi. There's awful private prisons there. They've only been charged about $26 a day, but the conditions are horrible. And prisons, in fact, have been taken away from the private contractors who have mismanaged them so badly. States like Pennsylvania, Louisiana, Mississippi, on and on. It's been quite a disaster. So it's cheaper to do it outside. In fact, the privates have even suggested moving prisons, believe it or not, to Mexico, in Arizona. They suggested building prisons in Mexico because they can pay guards a buck an hour. They don't get that much pay for it. And, Alaska is a state with a higher cost of living than Arizona, certainly than Baja Norte in Mexico.
Thank you. in the interest of time, one follow-up, just you mentioned safety. How many in Florence? Is there six prisons, different various prisons there?
There are a number of prisons. In fact, there's two CCA prisons. They both have a lot of problems.
How many escapees or have that in them two prisons?
Well,
in the last...
if you recall, Senator, there were six Alaskan escapees about 6 years ago. And in fact, they had difficulty prosecuting them when the last of them were finally rounded up because of two things. One was that the prisoners successfully fled, that the conditions were so bad in the prison that they were justified in escaping to get away from bad conditions. That was the verdict. And the second thing they said was that privates had no legal authority to kind of confine people in the state of Arizona, Alaska, in the state of Arizona. It's an interstate commerce question.
Thank you. I talked to many inmates down there myself, and I asked them, where would you rather be in Alaska there, and the ones I talked to would prefer to be there, but that's their...
Senator, there was an article on the Anchorage Daily News that tracked visiting down there. They found four inmates down there were getting regular visits. That's when the population was up around 825. I have 150 pages of affidavits from prisoners, Alaska prisoners, who were confined in Florence, Arizona, in the central Arizona detention facility, who described two guards riots that were just unimaginable. I've never heard anything like that occurring in a public prison since it had occurred.
Well, I guess it's our role to get the best bang for the buck, and it's not our role to coddle our prisoners necessarily, but they got to be treated humane. I don't want to waste any more time on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Cowdery. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any further questions of Mr. Smith? If not, thank you very much. Mr. Smith, we'll go on to David Katzik, who I believe is here. David, did I pronounce that anything close to right? State your name, please.
Kingistia Hatuasak. My Thlinget name is Kingistia. My English name is David Katzik. And Mr. Chairman and Senators, Chiegugain Kalachtuas Gru Ach Thlinget Yuchatangi, Yeet Chachwatani Team. I'd like to speak to you regarding in my language, because I feel very strongly about what I'm going to say. This particular bill, whether it's private or whether it's public, I would strongly encourage the legislators to take a look at what you have in your hands and ask yourselves a question. What will history say of me when I served in the legislature and the majority of the people that have been placed in prison are my people? Building prisons don't really solve the major problem. Prisons with rehabilitative programs and projects are the type of things that can turn things around. You're talking about money. If you're talking about money, then I would encourage you to take a look at the recidivism rate and find out how much you're getting double-dipped by one particular prisoner over and over and over again. The other question I would ask is, are we living in an addictive society where we continue to do the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, expecting different results, only getting the same kind of results over again, and then somebody comes and says, let's build another prison? Have you heard a little baby crying for its daddy that's incarcerated, who maybe started off in getting into trouble by drinking. Put yourself in the position of that individual. Have you heard the kid crying in prison whose grandmother passed away, whose grandfather passed away that they can't go and see? So I am not in favor of the state building facilities where you're going to have a state-run program, where you're listening to a special interest group. And believe me, when I'm saying this, that special interest group will be following me around, will be looking at me in ways because I'm saying something that's contrary to what the general rule is. And so I'm here to plead with you, Anyakhosani, noble people. You're noble people, just like I am, and just like so are those individuals that are placed in prison. I ran a brief demonstration, what I would call a beta-tested program, using our Tlingit culture and how we interacted with one another. And I called the prisoners that I met with, and I was doing this voluntarily with respect to the Alaska Native Brotherhood Camp too, and I called them Anyakhosani. I called them noble people. Those individuals that were incarcerated went back to their counselors and to other people and said, you know what, this guy called us noble. They were white guys. They were saying, nobody had ever called us noble before. Tears running down their face. Some of these guys are now out providing for their families and doing good work. So the point I'm making to you is building prisons are not necessarily the solution. Building prisons with respect to institutions that will allow us to develop the kind of programs. When do I say us? I'm saying Native people. When we become responsible as Native people for our own people, we are beginning to get healed. So what will history say of you? That you built a big, big prison over in Fairbanks that didn't do anything? And so I plead with you, I know I'm talking pretty straight on here, but this is like my third year coming here and talking in behalf of looking at ways and means, because it isn't just bars and cement and communities and so forth. Those are important, but you're talking about people, human beings. And so I appreciate the time that you've given me to give my emotional plea. It's emotional because I love my people. And there ain't anything wrong with it. There's nothing wrong. For me, what would happen? How do you think this would feel with me? My name is David Katzik, and I'm here talking about prisons for my people? People who can't fish, who can't hunt, who can't have dignity in providing for their families, and you can't tell me they're going to be enraged? That they're going to not know what to do? Know where to turn? So I see the rage of my people, of any people in this kind of situation. So don't build bigger prisons. Look for prisons that will be able to meet the need that history can record that you had compassion and mercy on your fellow man. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Katzig. Very much appreciate your comments. Questions, Mr. Katzig? Yes, Senator Calvert.
Before comment, we were down in the a tree, and Senator Lincoln, we met with about 30, 35 just Native people, your people, Yupik, there's as many. And we questioned them. Many of them were thinking should have tribal laws. They didn't think our laws was right, that they were there. They thought the Native corporation should do the prisons. I don't have any thought on that one way or another. But the last question I asked, by raise of hands, I asked would everybody in the room here, would you raise your hand that committed crimes against Caucasians? About a third raised their hand. I asked how many committed crimes against your people. Two-thirds raised their hands. So a crime is a crime, and you can have compassion, but you got to have compassion for victims and the victims' families, too. You know, so anyway, that's just a comment. Doesn't require an answer. It's something that I observed while I was there.
No, but I'm glad you said what you said, because what you said documents the frustration with respect to an individual in their community who can't provide with dignity for their families and so forth.
Whose fault is that now?
Whose fault? We have a limited entry permit. We have subsistence issues. We have a variety of different types of issues that are in front of us that we cannot be able to provide. So how do we come back and solve that? I would say, you are a human being, and the most important thing in being a human being is to be able to listen attentively to your spirit, to your heart, to your soul, to your mind, and work from being who we are as people. That doesn't forgive the person for doing something that's wrong. That's acknowledging a human being, like you acknowledged me today. I really appreciate it, because you recognized me, you acknowledged me, and you accepted me. It doesn't mean that you agree with what I'm saying, but the honor of letting me sit here, regardless of where I come from or my background, is a principle in any human relationship and interaction. So that's really all I have to say, and I appreciate it very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Katzig. Appreciate your comments. Ron Swenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Swanson. I probably didn't spell my own name right.
Swanson. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm the community development director for the Metsu Borough. On February 18th, the Metsu Borough Assembly passed a resolution supporting municipal owner state-operated prisons. That resolution number is 03-12, which I could be more than happy to get a copy for you if you'd like. Our resolution stated that the state of Alaska's correctional facilities are presently overcrowded, resulting in an annual transfer of many prisoners to the state of Arizona. The development of new or expanded prisons in Alaska municipalities would benefit Alaskans by providing much-needed construction and permanent year-round prison jobs. It would also maintain prisoners within the state, which will allow prisoners to be closer to their families and culture, and would enhance potential visitor rehabilitation. By working with other municipalities to expand our existing prisons, instead of building new facilities or transferring prisoners out of state, it will be much more cost-effective than staying with our existing system. The Metsu Borough currently has three correctional facilities: the Palmer Correctional Facility, which is located at Sutton, the Metsu Pretrial Facility, located in Palmer, and the Point McKenzie Facility. Combined, these facilities currently have 585 beds. These facilities have been in operation for many years and provided stable, well-paying jobs to our residents. The same can be said for other Alaskan communities where correctional facilities are located. The proposed approach of Senate Bill 65 would expand the correctional facilities in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, Bethel, Municipality of Anchorage, and the Metsu Borough. Within our borough, the facility at Sutton, where there's already an existing prison, would expand to 1,200 beds. The original facility was constructed with enough land, so additional land would not have to be purchased. Also, state trooper support is already located in Palmer, which would not be the case if the prison's, private prison was built in Whittier. To our borough residents, this prison expansion is important. We are currently working to develop our port at Port McKenzie, expand our recreation and tourism base at Hatcher Pass. With the expansion of our prisoner facilities and with recent work of bringing in a new regional hospital and mental health facilities, we will look to better diversify our economy. In summary, we support Senate Bill 65. For us and other municipalities, it will support a large number if direct, indirect, and induced jobs for the Nassau Borough. A recent study by the Northern Economic estimates this to mean about 1,300 jobs. Local boroughs and cities will own the facilities. The construction of several facilities in the state to house local residents. The State Department of Corrections will operate the facilities under long-term user lease agreements with the local boroughs and cities. Tax-exempt revenue bonds will be used to finance the facilities, and these will be done by local municipalities. The bonds will be secured by an assignment of lease payments that will be payable to the boroughs and the cities from the state under long-term leases not to exceed 25 years. Proceeds of the sale of the bonds will be used to finance the construction of the facilities and some bond and issuance expenses. The boroughs and cities as owners of the facilities will accept contingent liabilities above those not normally covered by insurance. And finally, through construction management agreements, the state will have responsibility for design and construction of the facilities.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. My question is, Mr. Swanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ronald Wilson. Mr. Wilson.
Good afternoon. My name is Ron Wilson. I've been a state employee and a correctional officer for over 19 years. I want to say that the statement is mine. It doesn't include the Department of Corrections. I'm here to tell you that private prisons have not proven that they can do it cheaper than their public counterparts. The way they cut costs does not serve the state. Offer security to the citizens, protect the inmate population, or even their own employees. They reduce costs any way they can, but their greatest cost savings is in the area of staff costs. Currently, public employees have background checks, psychological evaluations, pass the Correctional Officer Academy, and meet the Alaska Police Standard Council requirement to remain as correctional officers. If you're going to place twice as many inmates in one facility as you have ever done before, why wouldn't you want the staffs in that facility to meet the requirements that officers now have to meet? The largest contractor of private beds, the Federal Bureau of Prisons, itself states we have concerns with privatization for the confinement of inmates classified as medium security or high security in accordance with federal classification standards. This report goes on to say, with regards to cost efficiencies, recently completed comparison of the cost of the privately operated prison in Taft, California with similar Bureau facilities found that the Bureau of Prison institutions were somewhat less costly than the private facilities. In 1999, Dennis Cunningham, private prison administrator for the Oklahoma Department of Corrections, reported the department's current average cost of all medium beds was $4,101 per day and was lower than all private bed costs. Further, another study by the Federal Bureau of Prisons personnel states advocates of prisons privatizations have argued that private prisons can pay workers less, offer fewer benefits, and still deliver a product that is as good or better than that provided by the public sector. The evidence to date contradicts such an encompassing assertion. The data presented here indicates that less costly workers in private prisons an unacceptable level of public safety and inmate care to date. Staff turnover rates exceeding 50% do not lead to higher levels of staff proficiency. Another study by the Department of Justice in 1999 closes by stating, in summary, the cost benefits of privatization have not materialized to the extent promised by the private sector. Although there are examples of cost savings, there are other examples in which such benefits have not been realized. Moreover, it is probably too early to determine if the initial cost savings can be sustained over a long period of time. One major incident can alleviate all such savings. Just a few examples of private failures in this state. Number one, Delta Junction is now $1 million in debt to a private concessionaire. I don't see how that serves the public. Number two, over $1 million was awarded to five defendants from Cordova Center. The concessionaire has filed for bankruptcy and has yet to make payment to those five individuals. Tundra Center in Bethel, residents won a judgment when the concessionaire wouldn't even fix the toilets. Again, Tundra Center in Bethel, a resident leaves, commits an assault, returns, and no one noticed. I'd like to compare private prisons and public prisons like shopping for dinner. Public facilities would be like shopping at your supermarket. Private facilities would be like going to the 7-Eleven. With the public prisons, you get employees who believe in service and work at doing their jobs, and you have an awesome choice. At the 7-Eleven, it's self-serve. The choices are minimal. And you better count your change before you leave. And then when you get home, you get to open the package, see what you got for dinner, and really all you get is one crappy meal, but it was convenient. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Questions, Mr. Wilson? Thanks very much. Daniel Colano.
Good afternoon.
My name is Daniel Colang. I am a DOC.
That's okay.
Would you spell that, please?
C-O-L-A-N-G.
C-O-L-A-N-G. Thank you very much, Mr. Colang.
I'm an 11-year employee of DOC, but the views I'm expressing today are just my own. I would like the support of Senator Green's bill. I'll say that right off the bat, but I'm going to just attack this a little bit different angle. My father was a World War II vet, and was very proud to be an American, as everyone else is. But I remember when I was younger, he would always tell me stories of the battles he was in, and he really, really would bug me when I turned 18, you know, to vote. And he would always, every election, even when I got older, he would call me on the phone and remind me, did you vote today? You know, and it always sticks in my mind. He has since passed, but you know, he would always tell me there were thousands and thousands of Americans who have died on the battlefield for that right for us to vote. So as Alaskans, Alaska twice, the Alaskans have voted against private prisons. So I would ask that you as representatives and senators, to represent means to honor the request of the people you represent. Twice they have voted overwhelmingly against private prisons. So I would ask that you would honor that request. Thank you.
Mr. Klang, any questions? Thank you again. We're going to Dean Rand on the off-net. Mr. Rand, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yes, hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Dean Rand, and I'm a 25-year resident of Coastal Alaska, a long-term resident of Whittier, where I'm calling from at this time. I have extensive background in logging, commercial fishing, and scientific research related to the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And today I run what's considered to be Alaska's finest wilderness cruise, and have had the opportunity to showcase the coastal Alaska to many of our country's notable from the business, economic, and political world. Additionally, I'm a full-time single parent and have been for the past 7 years. All told, I'm a respected community member. Hang on just a second, get rid of that one. also, I'm a respected community member here in Whittier. As I'm certain even Frank Pruitt, who might be sitting there with you right now, would agree. I am not in favor of locating a private prison facility in Whittier as the plan now stands. Neither are any other citizens with whom I've had informal discussions. There have been no socioeconomic studies or analysis done to determine just what the impacts, good or bad, will be on our tiny isolated community. We are an at-risk community of only 180 residents, with 40 of those as students in our school. There's no private land or private homes. Alcohol, drugs, physical, and emotional abuse are the norm here. We are a community of often emotionally at-risk citizens.
Excuse me, Mr. Rand. Mr. Rand, we're dealing right now with Senate Bill 65, which is...
Correct.
Okay, and you can also testify if you wanted to Senate Bill 99, but I was a little confused, but go ahead.
Okay, I was just hoping that in any of the ongoing discussions that it comes up about the support that Whittier offers to Senate Bill 99, that there's a question to be raised as to whether or not there really is that community support here, and that's really all I'm trying to do is to help to paint that picture more accurately.
Thank you, Mr. Rand. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go right ahead.
Okay. It's my firm belief, and the evidence strongly supports this, that Cornell Industries specifically targeted Whittier understanding our community's vulnerability. Communications from Cornell opposed any public involvement in the decision-making process, encouraged local leaders to do so. And I'm sure that several members of the State Affairs Committee have seen emails dated October 17th of 2001 that indicate just what Cornell's plan is. Cornell's plan was fast-tracked to avoid any honest, open dialogue within our small at-risk community. It is my firm belief that this was an underhanded approach to gathering support for the private prison in Whittier. Today, there are discussions ongoing here in Whittier, the topic of which is private prison pros and cons. Today, there's a shift in public opinion, as demonstrated by our most recent elections, where we have voted out our pro-prison leaders and replaced them with leaders who are asking questions and listening to the constituents' concerns. Ladies and gentlemen, senators, members of the Senate State Affairs, when you consider any of the prison bills before you, I urge you to consider Cornell's behavior as they have steamrolled into and over the citizens of Whittier. And I urge you to consider that community support for private prison in Whittier is questionable at best. Indeed, it is my strong belief that community support in Whittier for private prison is rapidly becoming a thing of the past, now that the community is becoming informed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rand. Any questions? Is there anybody else that I've missed who wants to testify on Senate Bill 65? In the audience here or on the off-net? Representative Hawker?
No. Off caucus, excuse me.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right, thank you. I think we've reached everyone that wanted to speak on Senate Bill 65 then. Any comments from the members of the committee? My intention then not to move on this today, but to deal with it on Thursday, and hopefully if you agree to move it out on Thursday.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is public testimony closed? Are we taking public testimony on Thursday as well?
I'll give an opportunity for people to speak on Thursday as well. Sure. All right, now, then let's move on to Senate Bill 99. And is Senator Bundy here? Yes, he is. Senator Bundy.
Mr. Chairman, it's been such a long time. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman, for hearing Senate Bill 99. I'd like to point out at the outset that I offer this bill not because I'm an expert in corrections, but because, and I think it's in your packet, I have a substantial number of folks from Whittier who did ask that this proposal be brought forward. And on my own behalf, I bring it forward because, as has been documented a number of times recently, the state of Alaska is in a budget crunch, and I offer this as one alternative to the possibility of doing, if not more, at least the same for less. excuse me. $7.99 authorizes the Department of Corrections to enter into an agreement with the city of Whittier for a 120-bed minimum security correctional facility and services for a period of 25 years. Alaska does need a new prison. I think the question ultimately will be before us is whether that prison is in Alaska or...
Excuse me.
Yes.
I heard you say 120-bed. I think you meant...
I mean 1,200-bed. Thank you for the correction. Would it be that it were so? The question before us is, do we find that prison space here in Alaska or in another state? We're currently, as you well know, operating over capacity, and unfortunately our prison population is projected to rise. Given the current fiscal challenge of the state, a private prison offers the best value for scarce dollars. In addition to being the only economically viable choice, building a prison would bring benefit to the state, both economically and socially. You've certainly heard discussion about having prisoners closer to family and other support people. SB 99 will provide investment for future economic growth here in Alaska, creating more than 500 direct and indirect union-scale construction jobs and more than 450 permanent direct and indirect jobs for Alaskans associated with prison operations for the 25 years lease that would be authorized by this legislation. By locating the prison in Whittier, that community would have an anchor industry to generate vital economic benefits for an economically disabled or at least disadvantaged rural community. The majority of Whittier residents, maybe not the most local, but the majority have indicated, at least to me, their support for a private prison in their community. Excuse me. I think SB 99 makes sense for Alaska's economy and for our citizens, and would encourage your careful scrutiny and support. There are a number of people here that would like to testify on details both from a Whittier point of view and from a corrections point of view, and with that I would make myself available for questions and commend these other people to you.
Thank you, Senator Lundy. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In Senate Bill 65, there's a cap placed on the construction, so at least we know that the state will not exceed a certain amount for construction. Why wasn't there a cap placed in your legislation?
I'm not sure why we put a cap on any private enterprise. They're the ones that are responsible for being able to have a financially viable option, but there may be others that have another view.
Thank you, Senator. Further questions? Senator Cowdery?
Yes. These would be financed through bonds, as you understand.
I understand it.
And that bonds, in order to get the bonds, wouldn't they be pretty... Bonds are not easy to get unless they're scrutinized and make certain avenue to pay them back. So, to that extent, it seemed to me that... I think both facilities, basically, that we have here are bonded, are to sell bonds for the revenue bonds or whatever. So I assume that would be the case here. Is that your assumption?
And there'd certainly be bond counsel that would, if the bonds aren't viable, then the question's moot.
Yes. Thank you, Senator. Further questions? Thank you, Senator Bundy. Senator Huber would like to testify. David Katzik, I think I saw him leave, but Mr. Katzik is there. Okay.
He wants to be moved to the bottom. Jerry.
Sure.
Yeah, he wants to be moved to the bottom.
All right. And Frank Pruitt.
Frank.
Mr. Pruitt. I'm sorry. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Frank Pruitt. I'm a former commissioner of corrections. Spent about 20 years in public service, starting as a trooper with the Oregon State Police, and becoming a probation officer in Alaska for the Department of Corrections, legal counsel for corrections, and deputy commissioner for corrections, and commissioner under Governors Sheffield, Cooper, and Rahel. I have also with me today the senior vice president for Cornell Companies, Mr. Marvin Wheaton, who can address many of the questions and concerns that were raised earlier, as well as former mayor and current city council member Ben Butler from the city of Whittier. Mr. Chairman, this committee has heard testimony on a state proposal to build a 1,200-bed state-operated prison at Sutton. We're here to talk about the city of Whittier's proposal to develop a city-owned but privately managed 1,200-bed prison. Both of these proposals, at least in my opinion, my estimates, are based on sound correctional practice. I've heard nothing in the Department of Corrections testimony that gives me pause over the project that they're proposing. Both of these are located near Alaska's center of population and crime, Anchorage. Both capture efficiency through design, and they capture efficiency through size. We don't hear anybody talking about the 1,200 beds being mega prisons any longer. Perhaps that's because the state's offering a 1,200-bed alternative themselves. But the fact of the matter is, most facilities like this outside are running 2,000, 3,000, 4,000-bed facilities. So we're capturing the efficiencies of economy of scale. Both of these facilities are located where construction costs are lowest in the state. Whittier has a deep water port where construction materials come right to the site. Both are located where the wages and benefits are the lowest in the state, and both are located 50 miles from the most sophisticated and plentiful fire, life, safety, program, housing, and human resources in the state. The substantive difference between the two projects that are in front of you are management and cost. The Whittier prison will be managed by a private contractor, Cornell Companies. Sutton will be state operated. The total daily capital and operating cost at Sutton, according to the Department of Corrections, is $110 a day per prisoner. The cost for the Whittier prison is $94 a day per prisoner. And at this point, I want to be perfectly clear because there's been some confusion. The $94 per diem rate for the Whittier facility covers the total projected operating and capital costs for the prison. Those costs include inmate programs, major medical, staff recruiting, staff training, equipment, facility maintenance, and we could go on. The point is that the project will deliver the same quality of service as the state of Alaska. The only cost above the $94 should be the cost to bring the prisoners to the front door and the cost to monitor the contract. Transportation customarily is done by the Department of Corrections between facilities, and it's done by the state troopers when an offender needs to go to court. There's a perception that the Whittier bill and the Sutton plan are competing bills. And that perception is dead wrong, and it's diverting attention from the real issue. The real problem is that neither of these bills, standing alone, is going to solve our prison bed shortage. The Department of Corrections testified before this body a couple of weeks ago that there's going to be a need by 2006 for over 1,600 prison beds, primarily, and jail beds. We have validated that analysis, or we've backed up that analysis, or we agree with that analysis on our own. And it's in a packet that was in your bill packet. At a growth rate of nearly 200 prisoners a year, and that's been going on for the last 20 years, I was discussing with somebody today that over the last 20 years, the Alaska prison population has grown at a rate of an average rate of 5% a year for 20 years. There's nothing that I can see or that anybody has suggested in the demographics of our society in Alaska that's going to make an appreciable change on that in the near term. I don't see any major policy changes at work in this body that's going to reduce any of the crime packages that may have initiated this in the first place. If the Whittier prison is authorized this year, the doors to that facility will open in 2 years and can meet the 2006 demand. By 2006, there needs to be over 1,200 prison beds in the state, several hundred more jail beds where a central facility simply won't provide relief. And I would suggest that the Bethel facility is one of those facilities. If Sutton is authorized, the department testifies that the doors will not open for 4 or perhaps 5 years. So as a simple matter of timing and inflation, the two bills don't compare, nor do they compete. The only immediate in-state solution for prison beds is the Whittier proposal. But another project, like the Sutton proposal, and a modest expansion of regional jails where that's needed, need to be in place to fix the long-term problem. Conservatively, you're looking at 1,200 beds by 2006. By 2010, the state's going to need another 1,200 to 1,600 beds. Before you hear from the city and Cornell, I have three observations. Last week, Governor Murkowski, in his address before the legislature, said that his primary mission is good-paying jobs and reducing government spending and reducing government growth. Good-paying jobs, reducing government spending, and reducing government growth. The Whittier Prison is an economic development bird in hand that accomplishes all of these objectives. Good-paying jobs, Mr. Wiebe can testify as to the salary ranges. There's been a lot of misinformation about $8 an hour jobs. It's not true. Reduced spending. This facility does cost less. There are very good reasons why. The private sector has a different overhead structure. The private sector can build less costly. Yes, the wages and benefits are lower than the state wages and benefits, but there's good, solid private sector wages and benefits. I'm not aware of any project before the legislature this year that has such an immediate and such a long-term implication for secure and well-paying jobs. But what about the cost? You say, doesn't it cost less to simply continue outsourcing our prisoners to Arizona?
True. I need to ask you to sum up quickly, if you would, please.
I would point to number three, the red tab here, where we have a side-by-side that you can look at on comparing the costs. And behind that side-by-side is a Whittier Prison Project Economic Impact Statement. This is a March 6th analysis by David Reum, an economist. And Mr. Reum argues that returning the prisoners to the state of Alaska, even though it will cost the state more, the economic stimulus and economic benefit to the state far exceeds the extra expenditure. I guess I would wrap up by reiterating what David Katzik was talking about. One of my gravest concerns for years has been the overrepresentation of the Alaska Natives in the prison population. 10 years ago, when I was testifying before this body on other matters, the incarceration rate for Native Alaskans, the representation rate was 30%. It's approaching 40% now, and we have a serious problem in this state. And the bill that's before you has consistently been the only bill that has an express provision in the body of the law providing for Native programming. It's a commitment that Cornell Companies has made. It's a commitment that we believe in, and we think it's absolutely necessary. And our desire is to team with the Native community to provide Native programs for Native offenders by Native corporations. The fact of the matter is, I heard testimony that Department of Corrections programs don't work. I disagree with that. I've met too many people who have had changed lives because of the results of those programs, but I agree that these programs are not working for the Alaska Native offender. And We have a project that proposes to do just that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pruitt. Any questions of Mr. Pruitt? Yes, Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I attended, along with Senator Cowdery, down to the Arizona facility. And when we met in private without the guards of the facility, the four senators, the three of us today here, and Senator Lincoln, we had asked about their program, the potluck that they said was culturally relevant, and problems with that. In that meeting, no one there agreed that that program is working. They said they have to fight tooth and nail in order to get those potlucks going. They said they have to have private fundraisers in order to raise $5,000 in order to have those potlucks. They said that over half of the money that they raise are earmarked for latrines, portable latrines that have to be rented and brought into the facility. So they feel that there's very little, if any, cooperation by the people that are at that facility. And furthermore, after they raised the dollars, they asked for an accounting of those dollars to see if in fact the dollars were spent as the corporation had said. And on every occasion, they were denied access to those records. Are these the practices that are going to take place in this new facility if it's built in Alaska? Because the native people down in the facility in Arizona do not feel that the programs are culturally relevant. And in fact, whenever they want to provide culturally relevant programs, they're only afforded one a year and they have to fight tooth and nail. They do not have the necessary funds to do that presently, and they're concerned that they may not be able to have one this coming year. But they feel that no dollars by Cornell are being spent in this endeavor on an annual basis, not even for one program per year for their potluck. And I wonder if you might respond to that.
Yes.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, I do have Mr. Wiebe with Cornell Companies, and I might suggest that it might be in the interest of time, several of us could respond to these questions. But to respond directly, Senator Hoffman, Corrections Corporation of America operates the facility in Arizona. Cornell Companies is a different company. The intent of Cornell Companies with respect to Native programming recognizes that the Department of Corrections does a great job. But we have not, neither the Department of Corrections nor the justice system, done anything to curb the recidivism rate and the incarceration rate of Native Alaskans. The expectation, our expectation, is to team with Native corporations such as Ceres South Central Foundation, who I'll be meeting with soon, to enter into teaming agreements where we can explore some new ways of doing business, because the old ways of doing business have not, for this particular population, worked. So the direct answer is that our expectation is to involve the Native community in a meaningful way in the delivery of programs directly to Native incarcerated offenders. Will it work? I don't know. But I know what isn't working.
Any further questions, Mr. Brooke? Senator Cowdery.
You know, we had this hearing here a week or so ago. I asked the Department of Corrections if this facility was built in Mat-Su, designed by the private sector and built by the private sector, and operated by the public sector. I asked them the question directly, if a price came in that was lower to build the same prison in Mat-Su that they're talking about, that was the lower than the corrections, Department of Corrections was wanting to build, if I'm making myself clear, would they accept a lower bid, a substantially lower bid for the building, construction, and operations? And I believe they said they, well, after stamping it, but they said they would have to really look at that close, and I don't know what substantially is, but I guess the question I want to ask you, if, forget the Whittier prison for right now, if this one became available, would your company be interested in bidding for the construction of it, the design, and the operation of it?
Let's see, if you are suggesting that the Department of Corrections could put out a competitive bid to design and operate a facility at Sutton rather than have that be state operated, that's something that Cornell Companies and Corrections Corporation of America and Wackenhut and several other companies most assuredly would respond to, or at least look at. By putting words in your mouth, Mr.
I just... Thanks, Senator Carter. Before we go on, it was my intention to try to finish this at 5. We're not going to make that. Senator Dyson has another commitment. Does anybody else have another commitment at 5 o'clock? At 5, you do it. So. Okay, well, we will do what we can here in by 5 and 10 minutes, and we'll try to get to a couple more people, but I'd ask all of you to realize we will have a continue this this hearing on Thursday, and hope you can return at that time. Senator Guest.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pruitt, and especially for some of your clarifying comments. I did have one follow-up on something you said, because we've had many discussions in this committee about the costs and the added-on costs. You said major medical was included. Does that include pharmaceutical?
Yes, it does.
Well?
The confusion over the cost, I didn't realize where the confusion came from. In discussing this with Director Burnett with the Department of Corrections, the fiscal note attached to this House bill is the result of their analysis of the contract between Cornell Companies and the City of Whittier, as well as the intent language in the bill itself, where the intent language says similar services to Arizona. Well, in Arizona, major medical pharmaceuticals are not included in that. It is our intent that they are included. We tried to address that in the not to exceed 94 per diem language. As for the contract with Whittier, that's in the process. That particular contract was based upon last year's legislation, which was different. So there are some provisions of the contract that are not material provisions of the contract, where that's how that confusion came about.
Thank you. May I follow up with a
few
more? And I'm going to refer to the bill, and I don't know if you're better to answer or the sponsor, so my apologies, Mr. Chair, but it goes back to the cost, so you may. It says 94, the per diem cost shall be adjusted for changes in the cost of living. Cost not incurred until full occupancy. Are you familiar with that clause? And
that's in the industry, that's referred to as a ramp-up provision, and Mr. Wiebe is quite eloquent in explaining what that means.
Could I interrupt you for just a moment? Mr. Burr, will you be here on Thursday when we come back together?
We will all be here Thursday.
Mr. Wiebe will be as well. Look, I wanted to try to give everyone an opportunity. What about Ben Butler? Will you be here on... Okay, and Brad Wilson, and Jerry Burnett, Will, and George Wright.
Yes.
Okay, well, we will then continue to the end of the time, which we have is about 6 or 7 more minutes, and then we'll continue it later. Mr. Pruitt, I think Senator Guest has some more questions to ask of you then.
That one, and we can do that, if you want to.
Chairman,
do
any other questions, Mr. Pruitt?
I guess I'll ask one, and maybe we'll just handle the next one on Thursday and know that that's out there. It came from the testimony. It's an interesting question of choice of who you get to house in your prison when you have both public facilities and private facilities. At least how you read this bill, who decides which type of prisoners would be in a private facility and which type would be in a public. And I'm not as concerned about the security, and that's laid out, but there's some significant costs, and I think the Tennessee example was a good one of HIV, cancer, you know, prisoners who just cost a lot of money. And at least in your envisioning, how does that work?
Can I deflect that to Mr. Weavy?
We can discuss that on Thursday as well. I'm sorry, I didn't.
It's certainly all right, and actually, Mr. Weavy will have a few minutes in if you're
comfortable. And I guess I would say it's really the Department of Corrections when prisoners come to the facility and when prisoners leave the facility,
okay.
The custody levels, and as to the specific, if there are an offender population that the contractor, a contractor obviously is not going to want to have 100% disability of the offender population without talking. But I think Mr. Weavy can address that on Thursday quite well.
Okay, that would be.
Further questions, Mr. Pruitt? Senator Hoffman?
Chairman, have you reviewed the fiscal note that was provided with this particular piece of legislation, particularly the one dated March the 10th?
Is that the Department of Corrections fiscal note? And is the number somewhere over $50 million?
Yes.
Yes, we have reviewed that.
And do you agree with it or disagree with it? If you disagree?
We disagree. The $94 per diem rate includes all costs to the Department of Corrections, as I testified, except for the cost to bring the prisoner to the door and monitor the contract. $94 a day times 1,200 times 365 is $41 million. So we believe that the department's, I believe that we need some dialogue between the Department of Corrections and the bill sponsors so that corrections can actually understand how the numbers were arrived at.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you want that number crunching to happen up in finance or happen here. So I could save my questions for finance if that's the wish of the chairman.
Thank you, sir. I prefer that. That's where all the decisions have been made. I prefer that goes up to finance.
Thank you.
Well, as our time is rapidly closing, any further questions of Mr. Pruitt? Thank you very much. We will, we got a couple of minutes left. Mr. Weavy, would you mind at least beginning? And we'll promise you we'll give you more time on Thursday.
I'm not sure where to start with a two-minute effort, but Mr. Chairman and Senator Stevens, I am interested in just expressing to you first that Cornell, and I just want to make a brief introductory remark. Cornell is a company that views itself as a partner with state departments of corrections, and we're in the interesting position, typically, of being in a competition, but it's a double competition. It's a competition with our competitors, and oftentimes a competition with the Department of Corrections, as we see in this particular state. We have a direct comparison here. And in the midst of that, we continue to work in sort of a responsive partnership kind of arrangement, state after state after state, in an attempt as a company to meet the needs of that state. And I just lay that as a foundation for kind of a philosophical approach of being in a cooperative spirit, trying to come up with the best solution for this particular state and how we can actually partner in that arrangement. I'm not sure really whether to answer a couple of quick specific questions in 30 seconds that you've asked, or whether I should just address some general issues or answer other.
Well, we just have general issues, and we can come back to those questions in more detail on Thursday. I don't want to rush you, but I take all the time we need to do this properly.
Okay. Let me make just some comments about Cornell Companies. We're perhaps not real well known in the state, although Cornell Companies has been in business for a number of years and are traded on the New York Stock Exchange. We operate or have under supervision on any given day nearly 16,000 people across the country in 14 states, the District of Columbia. And as a company, we probably are several times larger in terms of the number of folks that we supervise on any given day than the entire Department of Corrections in Alaska. That's not to say that we're necessarily better at doing that, but we definitely are a company that's got a large base and a large perspective on the kinds of contract issues that happen, the kind of questions that we heard earlier today, how those are addressed, how we like to try and work out some kind of win-win situation in our contract negotiations, and on Thursday maybe I'll have an opportunity to answer some of those kinds of questions. Our company actually has a pretty significant presence in this state. Out of the roughly 4,500 offenders who are either in prison or in the community residential centers, we have almost 600 of them in the community residential centers that Cornell Companies of Alaska operates right here in the state. We have a total of 160 staff who supervise those offenders, and we have a fairly large presence. Have been here since 1998, nearly 5 years now operating that system, and we're the largest single provider of those services in the state of Alaska. Last year we've partnered with a number of folks, and this year our partnership continues. We're not just coming in here to operate, construct on our own. Our construction partner is Neisser Construction. Neisser's own is the architectural firm that we've engaged and have been with us for several years in our efforts up here in Alaska. We've been working closely with the Alaska Native Brotherhood, and as Mr. Pruitt mentioned, with the Cook Inlet Regional Corporation, we've got dialogue going and are continuing our negotiation, coming up with arrangements that really focus on the Native Alaskan issue. And with that, maybe I'll just close my comment and save the rest for later. And that is that this issue of Native or Alaskan Native programming is incredibly important, I think, and an issue that we want to really focus on. And one of the issues here, and just I'll bring this up from my own 30 years of privatized correctional and drug treatment experience, I found it far easier to solve the problems of heroin addicts, substance abusers, smokers, and folks of all kinds of problems in terms of addiction, except alcoholism. It's extremely difficult for alcoholism to be addressed productively in all parts of our society, and particularly in the Alaskan Natives and other Native cultures, is a major, major issue. We really believe that we need the help of Alaskan Natives across this state to actually provide meaningful, helpful solutions that are culturally relevant. And so our company is totally committed to trying to put that together. And while Mr. Pruitt raised the point, we're not sure whether it will be successful. I am confident that we will make every effort to make it as successful as it possibly can be. And we're going to be very open with access to our facility if we get a chance to put it up and operate it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your worrying with us on our time constraints here. I need to make a quick check of those people who are off net or are talking to us at the LIOs to make sure you can come back on Thursday. Dee Hubbard, are you there in Sterling?
Yes, I am, Senator, and I'd be very happy to come back on Thursday.
Thank you, Ms. Hubbard. Lieutenant Levesque, were you going to testify, or was are you just listening?
Mr. Chairman, I'm available for questions, and me or one of my co-workers will be available first.
Thank you very much. Mary Bowery in Anchorage, are you still there?
Yes.
Can you be back on Thursday if necessary?
Sure.
Thank you very much. And Frank Smith in on the off-net. I hope you can be with us as well, Frank.
Absolutely. Senator, I'll be looking forward to hearing.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate your helping us out on this time, and we'll adjourn until Thursday.